light day, a lot of travel coming to different trips out of town. But we have a special list to have on Shai Schechter in the yeshiva this morning. For Shai Schechter, the name's a popular name because one of the world's rebbeim, Rav Schechter from YU, who literally carried Am Yisrael during the COVID crisis with unbelievable pisgei halacha, is Rav Schechter's son. But Rav Shai Schechter, in his own merit, is his own person, is a massive Talmud Chacham. Anyone who's been on YU Torah, to hear Rav Shai Schechter's shiurim, just phenomenal. They're precise, they're high level, and they're simplified for us. So anyone could really learn and connect it to a meaningful way. Started a base medrash in Woodmere that has completely transformed the way Talmud Torah in the community in Woodmere. A game changer for the Woodmere community in the five towns. And Rav Schechter asked Shilas from all over the world. And had a personal friend. We were in graduate school together, right? Once upon a time. I don't think either of us foresaw this, right? But I'm saying it's at least a carpool back to the five towns, if I could get a ride. It's very rare to have such an unbelievable Talmud Chacham, but also at the same time, someone who just understands the world. And Rav Shai Schechter is really he's really the future of Klal Yisrael, the future of our community. And it's a big schus to have Rav Shai Schechter here. So Rav Shai Schechter is going to give us a shiur this morning. The topic is Google Play on Shabbos. Falls under our first pillar, primacy, relevancy of Torah. Right? So Google Play on Shabbos. It's a fascinating shaila that he's received. And hopefully we'll learn from it, we'll gain from it, and it'll inspire us to continue in our Talmud Torah. So without further ado.
Good morning, everybody. It's really a great pleasure to be back here, and Rabbi Safra and I appreciate being together with you here in the yeshiva. And to all of you who are not going on the Shabbaton or wherever else everyone else just went, I hope that this is worthwhile, an opportunity to learn together and to share Divrei Torah together, and you should have the chance to continue to grow in your own learning and your own understanding of Torah. Lahavin ulahaskil. So Rabbi Safran asked me to give a brief halacha shir about something that is halacha lamaisa. What's fascinating about the Torah is, many, many things are fascinating, but that it continues to evolve in a certain sense. It really doesn't, because as we know, look at the shelves here. You have a Gemara, and you have a Mishnayos, and you have the Rishonim, and you have just so many Svarim that we go back to. But what's fascinating is that Torah continues to evolve in the sense that new situations come up every single day. And new challenges come up for us all the time. And we need to make sure that we know how to apply all that we learn and all that we master in different areas of Torah to real life circumstances and real life situations that come up. And sometimes that becomes extremely challenging because it's very hard to know where to look when one is looking for a modern day scenario and how to figure out how that applies to a very old set of systems and laws. So take, for example, somebody came to me this week, Rabbi Safran, when he asked me to come speak in the yeshiva, I said, what should I talk about? He said, talk about some shaila that came up. So I was just trying to think, and then that afternoon somebody came and asked me the following question. He was in his home last Shabbos. Everybody here familiar with Google Play? No? Okay, so for those who are not familiar, it's different variations of the same mechanism, but basically, people have in their homes Alexa, right? We're all familiar with Alexa. So basically, you have something in your home, and you can speak to it, and it does all kinds of different activities for you. So this person told me that over Shabbos, his Google Play or his Alexa happened to have started to play music over Shabbos. He doesn't know how it started. Somebody in the family obviously somehow activated it accidentally. It was not something that they wanted to happen at all. And he said there was music blaring. He has a surround system in his house, so it goes to all the rooms of the house. He said he had music blaring the entire Shabbos, from Shabbos morning in the middle of the meal till the rest of Shabbos. He said he had guests in the home. He was quite embarrassed from this. And obviously the guest knew that he didn't intentionally leave the music on, but he wanted to know whether he'd be able to go to the machine and talk to it to instruct the machine to then turn off. Would that be considered something that is permissible on Shabbos? Or perhaps would we say that that would be a malacha? So I see that there's somebody already shaking his head and saying, no, not permissible, right? Why not permissible?
Because it's like you're already, it's like muktzah.
It's like muktzah. That's an interesting point. So it is muktzah, but what is muktzah? Muktzah is something that we're not allowed to handle on Shabbos, right? But here I don't have to touch anything. Here all I need to do is talk to it. I don't even have to handle it at all. It is where it is, and I just talk to the machine. So would that be a problem or not? Let's hear. Yes.
Well, I mean, before, back in the day, nowadays, you could just be just touching it. Back in the day, to make a fire, you'd have to do a certain thing. Now, you can just say something, so it's almost the same thing.
So here's where you're very correct. Here's where it's very challenging. How do we take the laws of Shabbos that we're familiar with or that we know about and try to figure out how it's relevant to this situation? If you look through, I challenge you, look through the Mishnayos in the back of the room and look through the Gemara in this beautiful Beis Medrash, you won't find a discussion about Alexa or Google Play. You just won't find it. So this is a very serious problem. Let me give you another example for a moment. Yeah, let's hear from you. Sorry.
I was going to say, it's kind of the same idea of asking a housekeeper to do something on Shabbos. You're not directly doing it, but you're still...
That's a great idea. Your head is thinking very clearly. That's great. Not exactly the same, but... what you're suggesting is we have a prohibition of Amira Lenachri on Shabbos. You're not allowed to ask a non-Jew to do any work for you on Shabbos. So you're saying that the same way I wouldn't be allowed to ask a non-Jew to do it, maybe I shouldn't be allowed to ask a machine to do it. Very interesting suggestion. Yeah, what do you say?
Wouldn't it be like a light? When you turn on the light, you're not supposed to turn it off. Let's just say I turn on the light by accident during Shabbat.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not allowed to turn it off, so why would I be able to?
Very good question. I'm not allowed to turn off a light, so why should I be allowed to turn this off? Well, the difference there, I would say, is when I go to turn off a light, I have to actually do it with some kind of activity that I'm involved in. But here, I'm not really activating anything. I'm just talking to it. Is talking considered to be an act? Correct. But is that considered to be my action? So I see everyone here has a whole lot to say. Rabbi Safran, you tell me. Should we take everyone's suggestions?
Let's go one more.
You tell me. Let's see. We'll take everyone after. Don't worry. I'll stick around. I'm happy to talk and learning with everybody after, really. And really, what's great about Halacha Lamaisa, I don't know, do you have Halacha Lamaisa classes here at all?
Yeah. Rav Sauer gives a contemporary halacha.
So lucky you. You're learning with one of the greatest Talmid Chachamim in Los Angeles. Lucky you. Whoever comes to that shiur has the opportunity to really engage with a great Talmud Chacham and to understand the process of Halacha. And it's so fascinating. And it's so unbelievable. You know, I give a shiur every week in my shul. We'll get to you in a minute. I give a shiur every week in my shul called Rabbis and Responsa. And I have so many people who listen to it because they say, we're fascinated by the questions that come up. What I basically discuss is a question that came up in that week. For example, 3 weeks ago we were talking about a very unfortunate, a very tragic situation. Somebody is pregnant, a woman is pregnant, and she is pregnant with conjoined twins. That's better known to all of us as
Siamese twins,
but the official scientific name is really conjoined twins. And this woman now has an issue because there's only one heart, and one heart cannot sustain two children. And the question now becomes, do we kill one child in utero to save the other? Do we have a right to do that? Is that considered to be ritzicha? Do we say that maybe one child is a rodeh for the other? Anyone here learn Sanhedrin? Right, so the Gemara in Sanhedrin, maybe you'll get to it someday, the Gemara in Sanhedrin talks about, if I see somebody who's running after another person, and that person is holding a gun, so I'm allowed to kill the rodeh, because he's trying to kill someone else, so maybe I should look at one child as the rodeh for the other, but how do I determine who's killing who? This one will say, you're killing me, the other one will say, you're killing me. So this is just one example of so many. Again, that's a tragic situation, it's a terrible story. You have a question?
And that is actually one of the topics Rabbi Sauer actually covers.
In fact, he just covered it like a week or two ago.
Yeah, so it's
But it really happens. It really happens. It's not just in the clouds. It really happens. And that's just one example, again, as I mentioned, of so many challenges that we have. Take, for example, we have someone in our shul. Anyone here familiar with the disease? A debilitating disease called ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease?
Yeah.
It's such a tragic illness. All illness is tragic. But it's such a tragic illness because the individual still has 100% brain function and their body just shuts down. and they have no ability to express themselves. So they're basically a mind trapped in a body with no way to communicate with the outside world. Now, we're blessed to live in a generation where they have come up with a mechanism where they can train the patient, where they can train the individual who has this illness to blink in certain ways with their eyes into a special screen, and it's able to pick up how many blinks they do. I think many of these patients, the only thing they're able to move as they're at an advanced stage of the illness is they're able to blink their eyes. But they're trained to blink in a certain way, and this many times means this word, and that many times means that word, and they're able to type on a computer. What would you say? An ALS patient on Shabbos. We have someone in our neighborhood. It's a tragedy. ALS patient on Shabbos wants to type on the computer because they want to communicate with the outside world. So obviously, if they need medication, obviously, if their life is in danger, obviously, if they really need something critically important, you're allowed to do anything to save your life. But what about just a friend comes to visit them Shabbos afternoon, and they just want to say hello, and they just want to greet the guest, and they want to communicate and have a normal conversation. Is that permissible on Shabbos?
No.
So, it's easy for us to say that it's not permissible. It's easy for us, but you have to think about the perspective of the patient and think about what saying no to that patient means. Now, sometimes there's no way to be makel. Sometimes when we have a shaila, we don't know exactly what to do. There is no way around it, but we have to really think very carefully and understand the issues very well to really know the answer. Is the answer really no? Are we so sure that the answer is no before giving that psak? So yes, you wanted to say something?
So for the Alexa?
Yeah.
I think according to Gemara, speaking isn't considered an action. So I think it would be permissible.
Terrific. So where does the Gemara say that? Do you remember? Where is it? Makos. Amazing. So the Gemara says in Makos, we have an institution of Malkus, that a person who violates a los haseh in the Torah receives a punishment. They get Malkus. They get lashes. If it's only dumya delav de chasima, that's what the Gemara says. The only time you can get Malkus is if it's similar to the original Losachsom Shar B'disho. You're familiar? Everyone here learn Makos? Yes? No? Not sure? Yes? So, I don't want to get into it too much because it's a digression a little bit from what we're discussing. But the Gemara there says the only time you're going to get lashes for doing an Aveira, if I talk Lashon Hara, will I get Malkus for that?
No.
No. Does that mean it's not an Aveira? It is an Aveira. It's a terrible Aveira. Go look at the Shmiras HaLashon. He says, you violate so many Aveiras every time you say something negative about another person. It's terrible. But I don't get Malkus. Why do I not get Malkus? The answer is because the criteria necessary to get Malkus is that I do something that is an action. And the Gemara says that if I just speak, then potentially that is not considered to be an action. Now, that might be limited to that situation of Malkus, because there it has to be very similar to Losachsom Shar B'disho. I'm not clear that that is a general rule that we can bring to other areas of halacha as well, that speaking would not be considered an action. For example, if I would say, let's say I cause harm to someone by speaking about them, right? So we know by Nezikin, I have to be held responsible. I have to pay for the damage that I caused. What if I damage someone's reputation? I go online and I write a post about them. So I wouldn't get Malkus potentially, maybe, right? Because you're saying if I speak, I wouldn't really
get a punishment based on an assessment of how badly you embarrassed the person.
So all of that might be true, but you can't say that it's as if I did nothing. I did do something. So let's get into the issue here a little bit.
Hashem punishes you in Shemayim anyway.
100%. You're going to get a punishment regardless if you do something wrong. You're not getting away with it. But when we're talking about whether or not I should be held accountable here, be Dei Adam, that's what we really need to factor in. So let's try to get into the sugya a little, and then we'll move on. So the Gemara says in Maseches Chagiga, actually the Daf Yomi is learning Maseches Chagiga now. I don't know if any of you learn the Daf. Yeah, there are people here who learn the Daf? Really? Amazing.
We have 20 boys learning the Daf for Chagiga. We're making a big scene for them next
20 week. Boys learning the Daf in Yeshiva every day?
Every
or they learn it on their own?
Well, they're a chabura, they're motivating each other.
Unbelievable. And who's the Rebbe? That is really phenomenal. I'm jealous of you. I wish I was able to learn the Daf. So did you already learn Chagiga Daf Yud? Yeah, we passed that already, right? So the Gemara says that Hilchos Shabbos is one of the issues where we say it's Kehararim Hatluyim Besara, which means it's so expansive. Hilchos Shabbos is so intense, there's so much there, but there's so little in the Chumash about it. You look in this week's Parsha, Parsha's Vayakel, and this is where we learn some of the laws of Shabbos. So the Gemara tells us, How do we know the laws of Shabbos? There are 39 melachos of Shabbos. How do we know there are 39 melachos? I challenge you. Open up a Chumash. Try to find where we describe any of the melachos. Nowhere. And the Gemara works hard to try to figure out exactly where the melachos come from. It's a Gemara Masechah Shabbos Daf Ayin Gimel, a Gemara Masechah Shabbos Daf Mem Tes, where the Gemara says that we have 39 melachos that are patterned off of everything that was done in the construction of the Mishkan. So although you will not find a description in Chumash itself of exactly what is prohibited on Shabbos and what is permissible, we derive all of it from all of the activities that were necessary to build the Mishkan, is what we say you're not allowed to do on Shabbos because that is considered to be a malacha. For example, we know that there's a malacha on Shabbos of Korea. What is Korea?
Ripping.
Korea. How do you spell Korea?
Kuf Vav Resh Aleph.
And what's Kuf Vav Resh Aleph?
Reading.
Reading. Very good. Okay. So Korea is tearing. You're not allowed to tear on Shabbos. Really? You're not allowed to tear on Shabbos. So when do we say that you violate a prohibition? Rashi says, what if I rip something just for fun? I take a piece of paper, I rip it into shreds. Would that be a malacha on Shabbos? Would that be categorized as one of the Lamates malachas or not? Rashi says no. Why not? Isn't that Korea? Isn't that ripping? Yeah.
Doesn't it have to be for a constructive purpose?
So it has to be for a constructive purpose, that is true. But a little bit more, Rashi says, was specifically by Korea. Rashi says because in the Mishkan, we have to look back, what was the malacha of Korea on the Mishkan? What happened was they had one huge piece of fabric, and they had to take it into smaller pieces to make it into the different parts of the Mishkan that were necessary to have a functioning Mishkan. So when it comes to a Mishkan, you have to rip it, not because you're destroying it, but because you need to have a certain measurement. So in order to get that measurement, you have to rip. It's Korea al menas litvar. If I'm ripping with my intent to then sew it into something else and to make it into a garment, that is when it's considered a malacha, because it has to be similar to the Mishkan. Taking a piece of paper and ripping it up just for fun would not be similar to that which was done in the Mishkan, because it's very, very different. I'm ripping just for the sake of ripping, and I'm not ripping because I want to do something more constructive after I rip it. That is one example. But there are many other examples. For just take one more, and then we'll go further. The Gemara tells us, what time do I have till? 10:10, you said? The Gemara tells us that we have a malacha on Shabbos of Hotza. What does Hotza mean?
Bring it out.
So you're not allowed to carry outside. What does Havara mean? So there's two different Havaras. It's interesting. Actually, in this week's Parsha, the Torah says, anyone know? That's called Havara. And the Gemara wants to know, why was Havara singled out? The Psukim never say, don't plant on Shabbos, don't cook on Shabbos. It only says, Lo Sevar Reish B'chomosh Vasechem, one malacha. Why is that? Strange, right? It's a discussion in the Gemara. But Havara there means cooking. Havara in other contexts means carrying something outside, Laha Avir, to transport something from one location to another. So we have a malacha of Hotza on Shabbos. You're not allowed to carry in a Rishus HaRabin. How do we define a Rishus HaRabin? So if I have a public space like this, this doesn't belong to Rabbi Safran. This doesn't belong to Rabbi Sauer. It doesn't belong to anyone. This is a public space that belongs to the community, or it belongs to the institution, right? So this would be a Rishus HaRabin. Would I be allowed to carry in here on Shabbos? Yes. Why?
There's an Eruv.
What Eruv? Oh, forget the Eruv. Let's say there would be no Eruv around. Would I be allowed to carry in this room on Shabbos?
Inside the room.
Why? Because there are walls, because the whole thing isn't closed. What happens if I would take the walls away and somehow I would have the roof on stilts? Would I be allowed to carry?
Yes.
Because it would not be considered a Rishus HaRabim, since it is Makura, since it is something that has a roof on top of it, we assume that would not be considered a Rishus HaRabim. Why? Because in the days of the Mishkan, what was the Rishus HaRabim then? The Midbar. The Rishus HaRabim was the Midbar, where everybody lived. The encampment of the Jewish people. There was no roof on top of the entire encampment. And therefore we learn from all that was done in the Mishkan to the way that we define Melachos in our generation as well. So that is a very important idea. When it came to electricity over the last 200 years, this has been a very serious discussion. How do we figure out what exactly the category of electricity could have been in the days of the Mishkan? Maybe you'll say there was nothing at all that was similar to electricity, and therefore electricity should be permissible on Shabbos. Now, how can that be? Imagine what our Shabbos would look like if we would say that you're allowed to start or stop electric circuits on Shabbos. That would be a tragic end to Shabbos as we know it. But at the same time, you can't just arbitrarily make up an Isser in the Torah. You have to really make sure it fits into a defined category of Malacha. And this is what troubled many of the Gedolei Achronim in the last 200 years to figure out, what exactly is the prohibition of electricity? How do you put that back into the minds of Moshe Rabbeinu and see, what would Moshe Rabbeinu have said had we given him this device? Would he have allowed us to use it? Would he not? And if not, we have to figure out why he wouldn't have. One of the very important principles that we need to keep in mind when we talk about a malacha is that the only way to violate a malacha is when I actually perform a maisa, is when I actually do something active. For example, here's a very interesting example. Rav Soloveitchik brought a proof from the malacha of Tzeda. Are we familiar with the malacha of Tzeda? What? So Tzeda is a malacha on Shabbos, Tzad. Tzad means that I'm not allowed to trap, not allowed to catch something on Shabbos. So we're talking about catching an animal, trapping an animal. What does that have to do with the Mishkan? Right, they needed animals for all kinds of things. You had to trap the animal in order to bring it to the Beis HaMikdash to be used. Okay, so that's why we have Malach HaTzeda. Very good. So what happens on Shabbos in the following situation? You have, the Gemara says, strange case, where an animal runs into somebody's house. The Gemara says, it's Tzvi, a deer, runs into my house. Now I'm very excited because now I can have a deer. I've been trying to catch deer for years. I really am not such a good, I'm not so good at this. So my hunting skills are very poor, and I'm very excited that now I have the opportunity to have the deer. It's in my house already. The problem is, I don't have a door. The front door fell off when the deer ran into the house. So how am I going to make sure the deer doesn't run back out? You can't. Why can't you? Oh, so the natural thing to do is, the natural thing to do is to take the door and screw it back on. Why can't I do that? That's bone and makeba patish. I'm not allowed to do that. So for sure, that's out of the question. Oh, anyone have a better idea? How do I make sure that the deer doesn't go back out?
Kill the deer.
So, can I kill the deer on Shabbos?
No.
Netilas neshama, I'm not allowed to do that. So what do I do? What am I supposed to do? Put food down. So the deer sits and eats Friday night, the chalent, the kugel. Now he's set for the week. He's ready to go. We'll go to the next house. You're right. So the Gemara says, stand in the doorway. Would I be allowed to stand in the doorway, or would that be a malach of tzeda? I block the whole doorway. Deer can't get out,
it wouldn't be Tzeda because you're not physically, like, the deer hasn't come to, you're not blocking the deer.
I am, because the deer is roaming around, let's say this room. Deer is roaming around, there's only one way out.
You could just lead it into a room with two doors, and you could leave one open and leave the other one closed.
So the Gemara says that for a person to stand in the doorway would be prohibited. Why? Because I would be violating the Avera of Tzeda by standing in the doorway. I am now trapping the deer. Even though I'm not the one who made the deer go into the room, but since the deer is roaming around and has the ability to freely go out of this room and not be trapped, and I'm stopping that from happening, I violate the Malacha of Tzeda by standing in the doorway. Now, what happens in the following scenario? Ask the Gemara. Let's say person A stands in the doorway. He did the wrong thing. He violates Tzeda, right? Person B stands right behind him. Is person B in violation of Tzeda?
Because it wasn't going to come anyway.
Like, what?
The deer wouldn't have come anyway.
Why?
Because it's already scared of one person.
Oh, so since person A is already blocking the doorway,
the second person doesn't do anything.
So the second person does nothing. You're 100% correct. Says the Gemara, the second person is not adding any value. So the second person would not violate the Malach of Tzeda. What happens if both of them are standing there? A comes first, B stands there, and as you correctly said, B really is not accomplishing anything. And now A needs the bathroom, so he leaves. So B is left there by himself.
Yes, that would.
So all those who think that B now violates a malacha, raise your hand. Wow. All those who think that B does not violate a malacha, raise your hand. So let's ask, why would B potentially not be in violation of a malacha?
Well, is B...
He stands where he is. They're standing. It's a wide doorway. A now leaves. B is standing there himself, but he was standing there before. And at the time that he came, he knows A left. He has. He's watching. He sees what's going on.
He didn't know.
What?
Yeah, he didn't do anything.
The answer is he did nothing. And Rav Soloveitchik proves from there, you see that in order to violate a malacha, you need to be actively doing something. Here, I'm not actively doing anything. I ended up being put in a position where I'm stuck, and now it turns out that as a result of where I am, I am blocking the doorway. But when I went there, I did nothing. When I did the activity, I was not violating a malacha at all. And therefore, you cannot superimpose a malacha onto me. A malacha needs to be done al yidei maisa. I have to actually do something proactively in order for a malacha to be considered one of the lamates malachas on Shabbos. Question,
yeah. What about, let's say, a light that turns on from a sensor? You're not actually doing anything. Let's say you're walking in front of the sensor and that's turning on the light.
That's called doing something. You're walking, right? That's actually a major question. But you'll say, maybe it's an unintended consequence. I don't want the light to go on. I could see anyway. That's another issue. But
trying to go somewhere, but there's a sensor in the way.
But theoretically, that would be a maisa because I am walking. I'm actively doing something. Question, yeah.
It's your friend's deer.
Yeah.
His house comes to your house.
Yeah.
You don't want it to escape because then it could just run away.
Hashavas Aveda.
So
you have a question. You're saying when I have a conflict here, on the one hand, I have a mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. On the other hand, I have an Aveira of Tzedan Shabbos and Malacha. So what do I do?
We get you an Aveira for a mitzvah.
Oh, so that's Aseido Chalosa say. Right? We do have such a concept that sometimes we do violate one for another, but that's a very complicated issue. For when you learn Yevamos Da'av Vav, you'll see the Gemara discusses a lot of these conflicts and you'll figure out exactly what the answer is. Let me give you one more example before you have a question. Let me ask you this. I assume in many of your homes, somebody lights Shabbos candles. Correct?
Yes.
I hope in all of your homes. Yeah. And if not, you should be the ones to light Shabbos candles. So, Shabbos candles is a big misconception. People think it's a mitzvah that is incumbent upon women and not upon men. It's incorrect. Shabbos candles is a mitzvah that all of us share equally. For example, this Shabbos, my wife is not with me. I came here alone. I'm leaving back to New York tomorrow night. And I think it's the first time in 10 years that we're alone, that we're separate for Shabbos. So every week when we're together, she lights Shabbos candles. But this week I'm alone. I need to light Shabbos candles here. She's going to light Shabbos candles in New York. Men have the same obligation. Let me ask you. Gemara says in Baba Kama, it's a sugya that's referred to as Isho Mishum Chitzo. Anyone learn Baba Kama here?
Yeah.
Yeah? You learn that sugya?
No.
What does Isho Mishum Chitzo mean? If I light a fire, right, or if I shoot a gun, and then after the bullet leaves the gun, it then goes and causes damage to something else. So if I go and I take a hammer and I smash down a wall, of course I have to pay for the damage. If I take a gun and it takes 30 seconds from the bullet to get from here to there, and then once the bullet gets there 30 seconds later, it damages the wall, do I have to pay for that?
Yes.
Yeah. Why? It's considered to be directly related to what I did. There's nothing else that happens in between my action and the result. And therefore, we consider that to be an extension of what I did. That's considered my action. That's what the Gemara says. So take, for example, I light a fire here. Now, right now, it's not going to destroy anything. I put a bunch of pieces of paper here, 100 pieces of paper, one fire catches to the next piece of paper, catches to the next, and the next. It goes 100 papers down, and after 100 papers, it then lights on fire, an entire building burns down to the ground. Would I be considered responsible?
Yeah.
Why? Isha Chitzo. What?
It's indirect.
No, that's direct. That's direct. I set up a system where I know in advance that this is exactly what's going to happen. I put everything in motion, and nothing happens in between my...
It's the same thing as if you have like a bomb in like the cartoons where you have that long fuse.
I set it up on purpose. Let's say along the way somebody comes, takes the papers out of the way, and the fire would have been extinguished, and then somebody else comes and continues on to make the fire spread, then that's something else. But if I set up a system, and by all natural means, based on what I did, this is the result that's going to happen, that is considered to be that it reverts back to me. Ask the Namuke Yosef, I have an amazing question. If that is true, how do we ever light Shabbos candles?
It would be a problem that it keeps burning into Shabbos.
Keeps burning. I light a candle on Erev Shabbos, before Shabbos starts. You can't light a candle on Shabbos. That would be a malacha. I light a candle on Erev Shabbos. Why would it be usher for me to light the candle on Shabbos? This week's parsha. You're not allowed to light a candle on Shabbos. So I would never light a candle on Shabbos. I do it on Erev Shabbos in advance of Shabbos. But now, as Shabbos progresses, every minute of Shabbos, the candle continues to burn as a result of something that I did. And if we say that when a fire continues to burn, it reverts back to the person who started it, then why don't we say that every minute of Shabbos I'm violating a malacha of Havara? And the answer is because...
In the first place.
The answer is because you can only violate a malacha
if
you do a maisa, if you do something. Here I am on Shabbos being passive. I do nothing. And therefore you cannot consider that to be one of the lamites of his malachos. Yeah.
I can stand here and hold a knife.
Yeah.
But if you push a guy into my knife...
Yeah.
Am I
responsible thing?
No.
We set it up. Okay. You say, you go here, I stand here with an iron. You just push the back. I was just standing here.
I actually had an amazing Shiloh. If you want to hear something interesting. There is actually a big discussion. The Gemara says in Masechta Sota, I don't know how much time we have, but the Gemara says in Masechta Sota, fascinating discussion. Would we say that a Kohen Shaharagas HaNefesh, the Gemara says a Kohen who is responsible for killing another individual, Lo Yises Kapav, any Kohanim in the room?
Yeah.
Right? So, God forbid if a Kohen were ever, right? So you enjoy Duchening. I hope so. It's a privilege that you have, that you give all of us blessing, you give all of us bracha. So, a Kohen Shaharagas HaNefesh, a Kohen who is responsible for murdering another person, is not allowed to duchen. Why? Because the Gemara says, Yedechem damim aleihu. Those hands have blood on them. We don't want bloody hands giving blessings to other people. That's not appropriate. That's what the Gemara says. What happens? All the contemporary Tshuvah Svarim discuss this. Rabbi Avad Yosef, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, and many others have the same discussion. What happens when I have a Kohen who killed someone, but in the context of being in the Israeli army? So, he's not killing someone because he's a murderer. He's killing someone because he's a soldier who's saving lives, who's protecting our people, who's protecting our country. Would you then disqualify him from being someone who's allowed to duchen or serve in the Beis Hamikdash? So this is a big discussion in the Achronim. Okay, so it's a major discussion. If you have a Kohen Shaharagas HaNefesh, but he's doing it for a mitzvah purpose, would that be something that we would overlook? Or perhaps not. Take, for example, David HaMelech. What was David HaMelech's dream in life? Anyone know?
Build the Beit HaMikdash.
Build the Beit HaMikdash. What happens? He gets everything ready, and he buys the property, and he gets everything ready to go, and what happens? Hashem says no. Why? Dam l'rov shafachta. David HaMelech, you're going to build the Beit HaMikdash. You know how much blood you spilled? You know how many people you killed? You know how many wars you were involved in? If I was David, you know what I would say back to Hashem? How dare you? How dare you? You know why I kill people? I was the only one defending your people. What do you want from me? You're upset at me? What was I supposed to do? What do you think? How dare you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu? You don't let me build the Beis HaMikdash? But that's not what happens. God tells him he can't. So this is a big discussion. So I was once giving a shir. I mentioned it. I said of Soloveitchik's opinion, of Avad Yosef, other Achronim. Okay, very nice. A guy sends me an email from Eretz Yisrael. He is part of the sniper unit in the IDF. He told me he was listening to my shir, and he happens to be a Kohen. And I said, instead of listening to my shir, you should pay attention to your job. But anyway, he says that, I'm sure you're not really familiar with how the sniper unit works, but he said that basically a sniper has such a millisecond of time to be able to precisely hit the target, he's not able to do it on his own. So you need one person who holds the scope and sets up the shot exactly where it's supposed to go, the target, and the other one pulls the trigger. If one person was tasked with both, it wouldn't be as precise as it should be. So he said to me, I am the partner. I am the one who does the scope. I don't pull the trigger. And I'm a Kohen. If I am helping the other person to facilitate someone else being killed, and again, the person being killed is a terrorist, but if I'm helping to facilitate, would I be disqualified as well? Similar to your question. How much do we say that when two people partner to do something wrong, how much do we say that each one is equally responsible? And how much do we say, well, in the end of the day, I did nothing, and you're the one who really committed the crime? Very important question. Again, a little bit out of the purview. We're a little all over the place. But here's what's special about Torah. You need to be a little all over the place, and you pull it all together and see the beautiful tapestry that Torah is. You see that when you go through Shas and you learn different sugyas and you go through Halacha and you try to understand each one al burya, you try to understand each one by itself, it really comes together and it's fascinating. So here, I think the understanding would be that we would assume that talking would definitely be considered a malacha. It would be considered as if I'm doing something. What's a further question is, anyone here ever heard of BCI technology? Brain-computer interface?
Oh, based off your brain waves.
Yeah. So they can put a chip into someone's brain, and they can activate certain things that will happen based on that chip that's inside. So all I need to do is think. And that is a major shaila. That is a major question. Is that considered to be a malacha on Shabbos or not? Whereas I would say, in order to be a malacha, I have to actively do something. And maybe you would say that using my hands is considered doing something, walking by an activated sensor is considered to be doing something, or what we're talking about is talking to Google Play would also be considered a malacha because I'm speaking to it. What about b'machshava? I'm actually not doing anything. I'm just thinking about something. Would that be a malacha or not? I'll leave you with this, something to think about on your own. The answer comes from a discussion in Maseches Yuma, Machlokas Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, where the Gemara is talking about the Urim V'Tumim. So the Torah tells us that the Kohen used to wear a breastplate that had Urim V'Tumim. And when there was a major question that came up in the Jewish community, they would go to the Urim V'Tumim. And what would they do?
They would take out the sheet.
They would present a question to the Urim V'Tumim. And the Urim V'Tumim, the Gemara discusses how the Urim V'Tumim would respond. Were the letters bolate? Did the letters start to jump out? Did the letters start to connect to each other? Exactly what happened is a good question. That's what the Gemara is describing in Maseches Yuma. But the Achronim discuss, what if a question came up on Shabbos? Would it be a violation of a malacha to present the question to the Urim V'Tumim on Shabbos? So you'll say, what am I doing?
Hashem's doing it.
So you're saying the whole thing is miraculous. Really, God is doing the whole thing. Hashem is doing it. It has nothing to do with me. I'm just asking the question. God is giving the answer. So that can't be considered a malacha. That's actually a fascinating discussion. Anyone know what day of the week Moshe Rabbeinu died? Huh? Why Shabbos? You're assuming. Yes. So Chazal say Moshe Rabbeinu died on Shabbos. You're right. Anybody know when on Shabbos we commemorate the loss of Moshe Rabbeinu? No? So it's fascinating. Close. So the good guess. So on Mincha on Shabbos afternoon, we say a paragraph called Tzidkascha Tzedek Liolam. That is really saying in memory of Moshe Rabbeinu. Tzidkascha Tzedek is Tziduk Adin in memory of Moshe Rabbeinu because that's when he died. So we say Tzidkascha on Shabbos afternoon because Moshe Rabbeinu died on Shabbos afternoon. Not only that, the Rama says that on Shabbos afternoon, because Moshe Rabbeinu died, we're not supposed to have any public shir. So most of our shuls do, but we shouldn't have a shir in halacha. That's why in many shuls you'll notice they have a shir in hashkafa, other things, but they don't have, sometimes, many shuls try to stick to this, that we don't have a real public halacha shir at that time because we want to commemorate the loss of Moshe Rabbeinu. And notice, without Moshe, we have nothing. Without Moshe, we can't learn, we can't teach, we can't serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu the way we're supposed to. Anyway, Moshe Rabbeinu died Shabbos afternoon. How old was Moshe Rabbeinu when he died?
120.
Torah says he was 120. What did he do on the last day of his life?
He went out.
No, that's how he died. What did he do before he died? He wrote Sifrei Torah. So, the Chasam Sofer asked a question. How did he write so many Sifrei Torah in one day? You ever spoke to a Sofer how long it takes him to write a Sifrei Torah?
Most of a year.
Takes a whole year. So how did Moshe Rabbeinu, in the last day of his life, how did he write a Sifrei Torah for each of the Shvatim to carry along with them? How can that be? So the Chasam Sofer asked that question, and he quotes from the Shalah HaKadosh, that the Shalah writes, it was Ayidei Hashbaz HaKulmus, which means, he did some necromancy, he did some kind of magical thing, and I also never knew what necromancy meant until somebody came to my school and used that word, so
raising
now you know it.
Dead.
What? He did some kind of wild thing, and he had the pen worked by itself, and the pen wrote the Sifrei Torah. Amazing! So it was miraculous. Is that considered to be a malacha? Moshe Rabbeinu died on Shabbos. How did he write Sifrei Torah on Shabbos? Forget about how did he figure out how to write them. But how did he do it on Shabbos? The answer is, it was magical. He didn't do it himself. God did it.
But wouldn't they be a shlochem? Because he's, on his behalf, they're writing the Sifrei Torah.
So that's hard to say. That's hard to say a little bit. But basically, the Chasam Sofer answers the name of the Shalah that when he didn't do it at all, basically the pen wrote itself. The question is, how can you have a kosher Sefer Torah that wasn't written by a human being? Take that to nowadays when we have computer programs that are able to print out a Sefer Torah, why shouldn't I be able to do the same thing? If Moshe Rabbeinu wrote a Sefer Torah without even writing it, he just had the pen write itself, isn't that the same as a computer writing itself? Maybe why can't I have perfect Sefer Torah? Anyway, I've raised a lot
BCI,
of questions.
Would that work?
What?
It's because Moshe Rabbeinu was the one who was probably controlling he was the one who was writing it, even if he wasn't physically writing. So would that work?
That's an interesting question. So there's a lot, again, there's a lot to think about. Hilchos Shabbos, as we mentioned, is Keharorim Hatluyim Besar. There's so much there. There's so much to learn and so much to master. And the more we know, the more you grow, the more you understand about different sugyas in halacha and about different areas of Torah, the more you will be equipped to answer these kinds of questions. So It's my very humble bracha to all of you that you should have the opportunity to continue to grow, to continue to aspire, to be great talmidei chachamim, to be the teachers and leaders of Torah, lilmod ulalamed, lishmar velasos ulakayim, as kol divrei haTorah hazos, uvizchus kol hatanaim v'amarayim, and the schus of all the Torah that we learn, it should be an opportunity for us to grow, to have families that will grow, and to be yirei shamayim, mitoch kedusha v'tahara. Yes, you had a question. Someone had a question.